Hey everybody, hope you're all doing well. Before we get to my guests, check out my YouTube channel. I've been posting a lot of videos there, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. And if you haven't subscribed, what is wrong with you? Please subscribe. Would love you guys to regularly check out what I'm doing there. And follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, InstaFace, Interweb, Twitter, whatever, at PaulMercurio. Need you guys to hit me up on social media if you want, and tell me what I do about birds that are basically invading my house. I got a neighbor to my left and a neighbor to my right, both very nice people, got a lot of bird feeders, and so my property has become like the Pearl Harbor of the neighborhood, because birds just fly between those two properties. Like, they eat on one and then they realize, I got to take a crap, so I make some room for my next feeding, and they deposit it right over my my property, on my cars, everywhere, and then they go to the next property, and what do I do to stop this and get rid of them? I try to flamethrower, but apparently that's not legal. I don't know, but hit me up at Paul Mercurio on social media and let me know if you have any suggestions, because this is my... my version of the birds. That's what I'm living right now. My guest this week, Jeff Benedict, wrote a great book about the Patriots. You don't have to be a Patriots fan, and mostly maybe probably you guys are, most of you maybe haters of the Patriots, but really interesting book about how the organization was built from the inside, in terms of the relationship with Belichick and Kraft and Brady, and just, you don't have to be even a sports fan to like this book. It's really well researched, really well done, and a really great conversation with him. So enjoy it, and help me with these birds, will you? Very excited to have my guest on today, Jeff Benedict, best-selling author of 16 nonfiction books, including the number one New York Times bestseller, Tiger Woods. He has done essays that appeared in the New York Times. He's been a basis of segments on, his work's been the basis of segments on 60 Minutes, CBS Sunday Morning. And his latest book is The Dynasty, about the New England Patriots. It's a comprehensive account based on hundreds of interviews with extraordinary access to Bob Kraft, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, about the Patriots and how they became a dynasty. Great to have you on. Really excited to talk to you about the book and everything that you learned about the Patriots.
Well, I'm glad to be here and appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, well, I grew up in New England, so all New England teams are my teams. And I go back with Steve Grogan as the quarterback of the Patriots. So I remember the days when Patriots weren't the Patriots that people know now. And so you've done some extraordinary reporting on this, and the access that you've had has been amazing. And you know, you said that you set out to answer two basic questions. How was the dynasty built, and why was it able to last so much longer than its predecessors? And you said, quote, "I found that the dynasty's durability ultimately resided in the unusual relationship between the owner, the coach, and the quarterback." And other than his play on the field, what was Brady's contribution off the field to it being a dynasty?
Well, I think that's a great question, and it's not one thing. But I think this is where Tom's personality and his character become so important, because his on-the-field skills and performance is so obvious. But it's the things you can't see off the field, and it's qualities like humility, foreboding. Those are things that you typically don't associate with great athletes and great success, especially in a physical game like football. But in this instance, I think it was Brady's willingness to tolerate, to put up with the coaching style that Belichick has, which is hard. I mean, it is like a military boot camp. And he doesn't treat Brady differently than the third string kicker. You could argue he treats him worse, because he is the leader, and so it's really important under Belichick's system for everyone to see that even the star is treated the same way. And so over time, this kind of stuff, like referring to him as Johnny Foxborough and criticizing him publicly in front of the team in meetings and in practices, you know, I don't think Peyton Manning or John Elway or Dan Marino or Aaron Rodgers would have ever put up with the things that Brady put up with during his tenure as a quarterback. But to his credit, I think that he certainly recognized Belichick's greatness. And the fact was that in New England, they had something magical going on. And I think Belichick, to his credit, look, he's the one who drafted Brady when no one else wanted him. He's the one who put him in the lineup when everybody else thought he shouldn't, and then stuck with him when Bledsoe came back from that early injury and was cleared to play. Belichick stuck with Brady, which showed tremendous faith in him and, you know, courage, I think, to go with him. So the two of them have sort of been joined at the hip for a long time. And although they may not be best friends away from the stadium or off the field, I think that there was a magic between them that they both recognized. And perhaps most importantly, Kraft is the one who recognized it. He saw very early on how important it was going to be to keep these two together. He didn't value one over the other. He didn't fall into the temptation of trying to decide which one of these two was more important to the franchise. In his eyes, they were equally important, vitally important, and he really had to do whatever it took to keep them on the same stage for as long as possible. That really becomes his sort of, that's his mission, you know, in the back half of the dynasty, the last 10 years, is keeping them together. So those relationships between the three are, that's why I focus so much on how Kraft interacts with Brady, how Kraft interacts with Belichick, and then how Belichick interacts with Brady.
And how does Kraft interact with Belichick, and how does he, in comparison to the way he would interact with Brady? I would imagine he seems so adept at managing people, and as you said, recognizing talent and recognizing important relationships that are fruitful. I would imagine he treats Belichick, treats not the right word because it sounds like favoritism. He deals with them differently based on their personalities and what he needs to get out of them as the owner, right?
Yeah, I think that is right. And in Tom's case, if we start with Tom, he treats Tom like his fifth son. Robert has four sons. He treats Tom like a fifth son. And Brady looks at Kraft, you know, like a father figure. Tom has a great relationship with his own father, but he looks at Robert Kraft more like a father figure. So the two of them, over the course of two decades, develop a familial relationship that is so close that when they talk to each other, they literally say things like you would hear a father say to a son, like, I love you. Mm. Or you'll see them hug each other or kiss each other on the cheek in public places. That's not for show. That actually is the way they are in private. It's the way they are all the time. Their families are close. Tom's relationship with Robert's son, Jonathan Kraft, is brotherly. They are like brothers. So that relationship is filled with emotional closeness. The relationship that Kraft has with Belichick is not like that. But that doesn't mean it's not a good relationship. It's actually an exceptional relationship. It's just a different kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. I describe it in the book as the most efficient, successful partnership between an owner and a coach in all of sports, not just football, all of sports. 20 years together, and there's a lot of trust, and it's going in both directions. Kraft trusts Belichick. Belichick trusts Kraft, which is so important in this business, to have that level of mutual trust and mutual respect. And so they realize what the other one brings to the table. So Belichick looks at Kraft as what he is, this superb businessman, this exceptional leader, a guy with foresight and a guy with, you know, a lot of savviness. Kraft looks at Belichick as what he is, a genius coach who, in Kraft's own words, was put on earth to do one thing, coach football. When you look at him that way, it makes it a lot easier to give him the discretion to make big decisions, knowing that sometimes it may not work out. But that trust factor is huge. And I just think you don't see it to that level in other organizations. the fact that those relationships are so different, it's like Kraft is the bridge, and that's how I refer to him in the book. He is the bridge between Brady and Belichick. And that it's not always easy being a bridge, but that's the role that the owner plays. It's the behind-the-scenes role that is not visible to the eye of the fan. Fans can see Tom's contribution to the dynasty because Tom always has the ball in his hand.
Right.
Fans can see Belichick's contribution to the dynasty because he always has a headset on, and he's on the field in those hard moments making the tough calls. Kraft's role in all this is really invisible to the eye of the fan because the things that he does are done when no one's looking.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the word humility a few minutes ago, and it seems like for this to work the way it has, humility had to play that word has to be applicable to all three, right? The way you just described the relationship between Belichick and Kraft, there's a humility in the owner just saying, you know what, I know what I don't know. I'm going to give this guy his space to do his thing, and the same with Belichick. And was there anything and by the way, just the fact that you were able to talk to Belichick extensively was pretty amazing. How did that did you have a relationship over the years? I mean, he's known to be a very closed book. Like, how did you put something in his coffee to get him to talk? Like, get him to really open up to you like this?
So I didn't have a relationship with any of them before I started working on the book. They didn't know me, and I didn't know them. I actually think that was an advantage and a good thing for all of us. I started by approaching the owner, Robert Kraft, because I really wanted to go in through the eyes of ownership. That's the one angle that really had never been explored here with this team. And so I started with Kraft and his view of all this. And it was through him that I, you know, was able to get access to the team. And the relationships or the interviews that I did with each of the principals were all different. And to give an example, I think when you work on a book like this, you have to be flexible and nimble in how you obtain information and go about it. And here's what I mean as an example. One of the people I wanted to interview very badly in this book was Randy Moss, who you could argue, like Belichick, doesn't really do interviews. And I knew that about Randy. And when I first approached him, he didn't even acknowledge that I had reached out. So it wasn't a rejection. It was just nothing. And this went on for a while. And eventually I was able to get him to at least engage. And what he asked for was all the questions. He asked for my questions in advance in writing. I like to do that because I find that when you give people questions in advance, they produce more thoughtful answers because they think about it. Anyways, I gave him the questions. And after he got them, I was expecting to interview him. And that didn't happen. What he did was during a Monday Night Football broadcast, because he's on the ESPN broadcast team, he had one of the ESPN producers ask him the questions, my questions, on the sideline, and then he recorded his answers to my questions and then sent me a digital file. And that was how I got my answers from Randy. And Randy was fantastic. Like, his answers were great. They were funny. They were insightful. They were true. So that's what I did with Moss. In Belichick's case, he also asked for the questions in writing. Many people did, by the way. It's just not that unusual. I sent Belichick way more questions than I sent Randy Moss. I mean, way more. I knew he wouldn't answer all of them because it would have taken him a month if he had. But the point is once he got the questions, he decided he wanted to answer them in writing. And I was happy about that. You might say, well, that doesn't sound good. It's actually great because I've done this before. And what I find is people who write out their answers, it forces you to take more time because writing is slower than talking. And you tend to get really thoughtful responses. And that is what I got from Belichick. Like, I could tell he actually thought about these questions. And so the ones that he did answer were very illuminating and honest and insightful. And so that's what I did with Belichick. In Brady's case, these were one-on-one sit-down interviews in his suite at the stadium, just him and I in a room alone. And they were some of the most interesting And I would say honest interviews that I've ever done with someone in my career, they were fascinating, I thought. And then in Kraft's case, both Robert and Jonathan Kraft, those interviews were just, frankly, it was like a deep download of information every time I talked to them. And I would talk to them whenever they said they had time. Like, I might get a phone call that says, if you can be at the airport in 3 hours, you can get on a plane with Mr. Kraft and interview him while you're in the air.
Wow.
And
wow.
I would grab a bag. I live in Connecticut. I would race up to Boston. I would get on the plane. And then if we might fly all the way to California. So I would have the flight and I would interview both the father and the son one at a time. That kind of opportunity was tremendous for me to learn, not only because I'm having a great interview, but I'm also getting to observe them and how they do business and how they operate, how they interact. So it was like a double whammy for me, interview plus observe. Mm. And so I look, my whole view with all this is, whether it's Randy Moss, Coach Belichick, Tom Brady, the Krafts, Drew Bledsoe, I will do this however it works for you. And because all of it works for me.
Right. And did you find, by the way, Mr. Kraft couldn't be a nicer guy, at least in my experience. I've worked at Comedy Central in one capacity or another for a long time on The Daily Show and then The Colbert Report. And now I work on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert and on CBS. But Mr. Kraft, I don't know if he still is, was on the board of Viacom and was at some tapings. And I got to meet him afterwards and talk to him. You know, I'm a kid from Providence and a big New England fan, and started to tell him not to trade this person and that person. He thought I was a crazy person. And he really embraced me. And, you know, they did something very nice to help my son out with an opportunity at the Patriots organization. Like, you could see how he could become a father figure to you in that way. There was just something about him that was very genuine, very smart, but not sort of the, you know, there is some sort of a stereotype of some business tycoons of being cold and hard and everything. And he's anything from that, at least in my limited experience with him. So,
well, just to comment on what you're saying is, one of the trips that it was not uncommon for me to get these phone calls saying, if you can be here by this time, you can get on a plane. That happened a lot over a 2-year period. One of the times that happened was not long after the mass shooting at the Jewish synagogue in Pittsburgh in the fall of 2018. And I got one of those calls and to get up to Boston, and I rushed up there. And what I was told was that I could interview him on a short flight from Boston to Pittsburgh because he was going to the synagogue for the first bar mitzvah since the shooting that had happened like 5 weeks earlier. I went. When we got to Pittsburgh, I did the interview on the plane, but when we got to Pittsburgh, I went with him to the synagogue. I'd never been to a Jewish synagogue before. And I followed him in. You picture the scene. It's in Pittsburgh. A lot of Jewish congregants gathered in the synagogue. It's very emotional. Some of the shooting victims who had survived were in the audience. In walks Mr. Kraft. Most people didn't realize he was there when he came in. But the rabbi knew. And at one point, he informed all of the people in the audience that there was a guest in, and he introduced him as the owner of the New England Patriots, and then invited him to come up and say a few words. And Robert went up and spoke and read from the Torah in Hebrew. Mm. I was sitting there dumbfounded because I was not only listening, but I'm looking around the room at all of these Pittsburgh Steelers fans who are listening to the owner of the New England Patriots talk about things like life and death and spirituality and unity. People were emotional. People were crying. When he finished his remarks, he invited up the young man who was having his bar mitzvah that day. And the young man came up, as did his parents. And Robert reached into his pocket and pulled out 4 tickets to the next day's game. The next day, the Patriots were playing the Steelers in Pittsburgh, and he gave this young man 4 tickets for him and his family to go to the Steelers game, knowing they were Steelers fans. Mm. And when he sat down back in his seat, I was sitting right next to him, the man behind him reached forward and handed him a skull cap that had the Pittsburgh Steelers insignia sewn into it, and patted Kraft on the back, and in a very emotional tone said, "It is good that you came here today." I'm telling you, like, I've observed one thing after the other like that while working on this book. So it's real. I mean, I saw that for 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, he when he found out what fans we were, and he, like you said, he sort of embraced us in a way that really surprised me for somebody at that such a high level of business, and you know where he is and what he's done in his life and his career. And he got his tickets 50-yard line. I got to take my son to the trophy room, and we stood there and took pictures and talked to Willie McGinnis, and my jaw was on the floor. Like, it was like, it was, you know what I mean? And man, I was a hero to my kid. Like, this is like whatever. And my son got an opportunity to do an internship with the Patriots, which he loved. It just struck me, you know, I mean, in the business that I'm in, and in some ways you are too, like, you meet some people who big time you, as I call it, you know, and they're not really big timers, and they'll big time you, you know, and treat you like not great. But this is a guy who has a right, because he's so huge, to big time anybody he wants, and he does. And he just seemed like such a mensch, for lack of a better term. But what was it on that, those plane trips you talked about, or these conversations with Mr. Kraft, that you gleaned in terms of his business approach and business strategy, and what makes him so successful as a businessman, that came out of these conversations? I would imagine that you really got an insight into him beyond football, like what makes him so good at what he does and how he does it.
Well, I love that question that you've just asked. And I, in the very beginning of the book, the second chapter is called Bobby, and that's obviously Robert. But when he was young, his nickname was Bobby. And I opened that chapter very early in the story with him meeting the girl that will become his wife, and this very unlikely story of how he ends up marrying her. And I say in that part of the book, there's really three things that foreshadow how or why Robert Kraft would one day pull off this series of unthinkable feats. One, acquiring the team. Two, choosing Belichick as a head coach, despite all the warnings from everyone saying that was going to be a huge mistake. And then three, convincing Tom Brady to remain in New England for 20 years. And those three qualities were perseverance, instinct, and persuasiveness. And I saw that up close over and over and over again. And that middle one, instinct, that's not something you can teach. I think you either have instincts or you don't. And I think Robert has amazing instincts. A lot of the big decisions he makes with his gut. That's how he hired Belichick. It was a gut instinct that went against conventional wisdom. And I think his powers of persuasion, which you sort of referred to in your own dealings with him, but he has a way with people. He has a great way of working with people from diverse economic backgrounds, racial backgrounds. It doesn't matter. He's really good at forming connections with people, whether it's rock stars, and there's plenty of those in this dynasty story, politicians, CEOs, or what I call the common man. I mean, I think because he sat in the stands for so many years as a frustrated fan, he really does understand the folks who buy the tickets.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of instinct doesn't surprise me, because, I mean, he grew up in a business. He grew up in a family business. He grew up in that cardboard business. I grew up in a small furniture business in Providence. But it's still the same. Like, when you grow up in business, it is so many formidable things happen to you as a child that get ingrained in you that you can't learn in business. Like, if he didn't work in a business like that and then went to Harvard Business School, I don't think he'd have the same instincts, because there's just stuff that happens to you at such an early age that is so impactful that I imagine he took with him, not even knowing consciously that he was taking that with him, that allowed him to have that kind of instinct, don't you think?
I think that, look, the reason that I spend as much time in the early, you know, I don't go on and on for chapters, but in the first couple of chapters, I do spend a fair amount of space delving into his upbringing, the kind of home he grew up in, the fact that he wasn't born with a silver spoon in his mouth. His upbringing was pretty poor. I mean, his parents didn't own a home. They didn't even own a car. They didn't even own a television. I mean, he grew up very differently than we know him now. But the values that his parents instilled in him in that home, that's kind of what he's all about today. I mean, that's what's really interesting to me. So I wanted to know what it was like in his house. What was his relationship with his mother like? And what was his relationship with his father like? And then what was his parents' relationship like? Because all of those things factor into who he becomes as a man, as a husband, as a father, and as a businessman. And so I think it's important when you're trying to understand the dynasty to know the sort of formative character of the man who started the whole thing.
Right. You know, it's interesting because there's a parallel between Belichick as a coach and Kraft as an owner as we speak, and that they both in some ways either explicitly or implicitly warned about making a big decision. One was, you just mentioned, Kraft used his instincts, went against what was being said about Belichick and chose him. Tom Brady wasn't obviously a top recruit out of college, and Belichick went with him. They both obviously went with their instincts. What was it about Belichick from these conversations with Kraft that got him to believe, no, this is my guy, despite what everyone else is saying? And what was it about Brady that got Belichick to go, this is my guy, and then again revisit that decision and stick with him after Bledsoe's injury?
Well, I think in Kraft's case, there's a, you know, he had the benefit, and this is where the Bill Parcells thing comes in. It's so important. When Kraft buys the team in 94, he inherits Bill Parcells, who's the head coach at the time. They don't get along. There's friction early in that relationship, and the friction builds as time goes on. But one of the things that Parcells did that's so critical to this whole story is he's the one who convinces Kraft to meet with Belichick and try to lure Belichick to New England, because Belichick had just been fired as the head coach in Cleveland, and he was about to be hired to be the defensive coordinator in Miami. Parcells knew that, and he didn't want Belichick to go to Miami and then coach against him in the division.
Right.
He's telling Kraft, we've got to get this guy. And Kraft is going, why? We don't need a defensive coordinator. We already have one. But Parcells does convince him to at least go meet with him. And this is the beginning. Like, the original seed of the Kraft-Belichick relationship is right now, when Kraft gets on a plane and goes out to Indianapolis to meet Belichick, and they spend hours together. And this is one of the things that Belichick talked about in my questions with him that I don't know that he's ever talked about before. But that meeting was really important, because with the kinds of things they talked about, and the way Belichick talked about football and coaching and the salary cap and all these different things, Kraft had never heard Parcells talk like that in 3 years. And he was really intrigued. So they hire him. They bring Belichick in. And for 1 year, he's an assistant coach in New England under Parcells. And that year, they went to the Super Bowl. Now, they lost to Green Bay, but that's not the important part here. The important part is, the day before the Super Bowl against the Packers, at that point, Kraft knows Parcells is leaving after that game. He knows he needs a new head coach. He's been watching Belichick all year long as an assistant and seeing how the players relate to him, respond to him, how great of a coach he is and a teacher on the field. So on the day before the Super Bowl, the Patriots are having their last practice. It's a closed practice. And this story's in the book. It's a closed practice, so no one's supposed to be there. And Kraft notices Jon Bon Jovi walking around the field. What's he doing here? And Kraft knows that Bon Jovi is close to Belichick and to Parcells. So he walks over to him and he says, tell me about your friend. And Bon Jovi goes, you mean Belichick? And he says, yeah. And so Bon Jovi starts telling Kraft how great of a coach he is. Well, Kraft has already arrived at that conclusion on his own. He's basically wants Bon Jovi to tell him one thing he doesn't know, which is tell me about him as a man. Like, what is he like personally? That's what he's trying to get out of Bon Jovi. And Bon Jovi delivers. And Kraft at that point wants to hire Belichick, but doesn't because of one thing. He doesn't trust him enough because of his longtime close association with Parcells. So he doesn't offer him the job. He offers it to Pete Carroll. And then 3 years later, he's kicking himself for not doing it. And that's when he wrestles him out of New York and brings him in and then makes him the head coach. That relationship is, if you look at its origins, that's why I think you can see why they see so many things through a similar set of eyes. Brady, on the other hand, I think with Belichick, what's fascinating here is he knew, or at least thought, that Brady had this really unique quality when they were looking at the draft, was that even though there were other quarterbacks that were rated higher than him in the draft in 2000, when Belichick scouted Brady, what he saw was he performed at his best when the Patriots, when the Michigan Wolverines were losing and when the clock was running out. That's when Brady would always rise to the occasion. And what Belichick was noticing was like, that may be one of the most important intangible qualities in an NFL quarterback. And that's not something you can teach somebody. It's one of those you either have it or you don't. So the problem was, though, in 2000, the Patriots were a team that was going downhill and needed a lot of help. The only position they didn't need help in was quarterback. That's the only reason that Belichick didn't draft Brady earlier. It wasn't because he didn't think he was good. It was because they needed so many other things that were higher priorities. So they kept picking the guys they needed. By the time they got to the sixth round, Belichick had been watching Brady the whole draft, and he kept asking the guys in the war room, why is he still on the board? Why is he still on the board? There's too much value there. So finally, they picked him at the end of the sixth round and brought him in. People mistakenly think today that the reason Belichick waited so long was because he didn't really think he was going to be good. That's not the case. It's because he had Drew Bledsoe. And he had two quality backups behind him. They already had three quarterbacks.
Yeah.
That's why he waited so long. And so I think that speaks to Belichick's ability to see guys like him, like Julian Edelman, this midget left-handed quarterback from Kent State that no one else cared about.
Right.
He finds guys like that. And then you see what happens.
Yeah. Listen, I got goosebumps talking to you because this is – there's so much more I want to know and talk. I'd love to do this again and have another conversation with you about the book. It's just fascinating, and the reporting is amazing. Well, I got to tell you, this is just really—it's really an incredible book. I want to have you back on and talk more, and just get. There's so many other questions I have, but the book is fantastic. It's the Dynasty. The access that you've had is incredible. Everyone should go out and get it. And also your other works are fantastic too. It's really great to have you on. Congratulations on the book and the access. And I'm very impressed that you got Bill Belichick to even talk to you, let alone how much he did. So, so anyway, it's great to have you on. Jeff Benedict, congratulations on the book.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right, there you go. Jeff Benedict, great guy. We're going to do another conversation with him because there's so much more we didn't even get to. Check out the YouTube channel, youtube.com/PaulMercurio, and please subscribe and follow me on social media. And we'll see you guys next week.